JM and the AM, I got to thank my wonderful relative and friend, Michael Feldstein, for recommending that we speak to her by Dr. Shlomo Brody. When I saw Michael recently, he reminded me about just how important the AMATAI organization is. Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Brody, who's with us live via telephone, is executive director of AMATAI and the Jewish Law Live columnist for the Jerusalem Post. He is author of A Guide to the Complex, Contemporary Halachic Debates, received a National Jewish Book Award for that book. His second book, Ethics of Our Fighters, A Jewish View on War and Morality, was published this past January. He's a Harvard graduate, MA from Hebrew University, PhD from Bar-Ilan University, and he's executive director of AMATAI. Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Brody, a pleasure to welcome you back to JM in the AM.
Great to be back with you.
Tell me about the timing of the second book. Came out in January, Ethics of Our Fighters. I'd have to assume, knowing the way book publishing works, that you probably embarked on this way before the current war. What in fact has been the timetable for this work?
Yeah, no doubt. I've been working on it for some time. Unfortunately, the issues of military ethics have come up pretty regularly in Israel. I was working on it for several years, and we sort of said before the Chagim in 2023, okay, you know, we'll finish this off Acharei HaChagim, as they say in Israel, as soon as the holidays are over. Yeah. And October 8th, I wake up and I call, you know, the publishers of Magid and I say, okay, let's go. And unfortunately, you know, half the people on their staff are in reserves in Miluim, the other half are kids in Miluim. But we were able to get out pretty quickly. And thank God, it's been very redeeming and to be able to help people think through some of these issues so they can talk articulately about it.
And I would imagine that, you know, there's a vast array of questions and discussions regarding ethics of our fighters, as you call it, the Jewish view on war and morality. And obviously, this whole topic has been one of international curiosity and has entered the political scene over the last few months. That we all know. What would be a good example? I know there's a million scenarios, and obviously most of what has to be decided eventually in specific cases literally is about specific cases, you know, very subjective to that, you know, specific question or circumstance. But if one were to ask you for a good general topic that often comes up and has to be dealt with on the subject of ethics and the army, what would you tell us would be a good example of that?
I think the most pertinent example, especially now, is relates to how much you have to do in order to avoid killing non-combatants, what we call collateral damage. And that's a huge concern. You want to target the combatants. You want to kill the Hamas terrorist, in this case, or Hezbollah terrorist. But you'd also like to avoid causing harm to those that aren't causing harm to you, particularly when it comes to, let's say, children. And sometimes, you know, it's easy to isolate those terrorists away from the non-combatants, but given the way Hamas is fighting, not just within their people, but underneath their people, it's literally impossible. And so that's one of those questions you sometimes have to balance. We believe that all human beings are created in the image of God. We respect the dignity, inherent dignity of all human beings, but you also have a moral responsibility, a halachic responsibility to protect your own people. Yeah. And so you have to balance a little bit of those factors. I think when push comes to shove, we have to balance protecting our own people, and the responsibility falls on the other side for the fact they've had so much collateral damage. But that's a difficult issue people have to discuss.
Yeah, well, I get that. And very often, you know, the armchair military generals that we are, especially from thousands of miles away, get frustrated with just how careful Israeli forces are being in the area you just described. But the way you're describing it now, it's a subject that really does have to be taken very seriously, and it can't be a lighthearted attitude that, you know, we're defending our people and therefore, you know, all systems go and everything, you know, and no holds barred, so to speak. And I think that's sometimes important for us to keep as a perspective, because sometimes it does get frustrating when, God forbid, some type of tragedy hits when it's assumed that if our soldiers would have acted a bit differently or more aggressively, you know, we would not have suffered the losses we did.
Yeah, it's very frustrating because there are a lot of armchair quarterbacks, and not just from, you know, let's say the broader Jewish community, which I understand their frustration where that's coming from, but particularly from Western leaders who are like, well, how can you justify these types of deaths of the non-combatants? You know, these Western leaders haven't had to fight a war in their own territory for many, many decades at this point, right. Like at Canada, like at France, many other places. So that is frustrating. But it is something that, of course, we shouldn't take lighthearted, and we should care about this greatly for both strategic but also moral reasons. And I think it's actually a Jewish value. You see this in classic rabbinic sources as well. We talk about the idea, you've got to win wars. You have to protect your people. This is a primary imperative, right. But you should also try, when possible, to avoid killing those that don't need to be killed.
I assume the book's available everywhere at this point, right?
Everywhere. Yeah, thank God. I mean, it's been helping a lot of people and selling a lot. And we've been doing book clubs and synagogues and Jewish community centers. And I'm very thankful that people are finding it as a useful resource.
By the way, folks, this is not our topic for today. Rabbi Brody's been asked to come on just to update us regarding the incredible work of Amatai, which we're going to get into in a moment. But again, I do want to highly recommend and make everyone aware of the fact that there is a book that he has published, that he has written and was published back in January. It's called Ethics of Our Fighters, A Jewish View on War and Morality. I seriously think that many of us in this audience are going to want to check it out. All right, Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Brody, Executive Director of Amatai, the last time we spoke, I don't remember everything about that conversation, but I do think we described to this audience how the organization, you'll remind me if I have this right, really started with a mission regarding organ donation. And that very, again, complicated and sensitive topic that is gaining a following. It continues to gain a following in our community because people are researching it and doing and going about saving other lives in a proper fashion. That's, of course, to be encouraged. We want to do everything according to halacha. How is that going in terms of educating our Jewish world regarding organ donation? And what else has Amatai taken upon itself to be a consultation group or a resource for the worldwide Jewish community?
Well, there's been a lot of attention for organ donation because of the 12 soldiers who have been killed in action and who saved 48 Israeli lives through the gift of organ donation, which is pretty remarkable. Wow. But it's really just a small snippet of the major issues that come up that people are struggling with when thinking about questions of end of life and aging. And I'll just tell you, yesterday I spoke to the OU program. In the middle of the day, New York Times, how many people want to hear a lecture about end-of-life care and halacha? Over 250 people were there online. 600 people registered. It's like one of their biggest programs ever. And you see, why is that? And it's because people are struggling with dealing with these dilemmas with themselves, with their loved ones, and they're looking for some Jewish wisdom and guidance and halacha. And you see that in so many different ways right now. People struggle, and we're trying to help people through education, through tools, through resources, to approach these things so they feel that their Judaism, their Torah, can provide some guidance and some comfort when they have to make very difficult decisions.
So we always, or many of us always, think about, end-of-life issues in terms of those who are ill and need somebody to take over their decision-making and things like that. Obviously, there are ethical and halachic issues that need to be dealt with in many cases when it comes to end-of-life issues. Am I missing anything here? What else, should people be concerned with when it comes to that period of time when, a loved one or they themselves are in that type of situation?
Well, I think there are two elements here. One is to prepare for yourself and your family who should make decisions on your behalf, who would be your power of attorney, who would be the Rav, the rabbi you'd consult with. And we have a whole document on our website, amatai.org, which is a halachic living will where people can designate that. You can also need to really speak with your own family about your general preferences and values, how you think about these issues, so that when they have to make decisions, and people ask, well, what do you think mom or dad would want? They have a clue of what you'd want. But I think the other element that we're trying to promote is it's not just about, avoiding bad situations. It's also confronting mortality with a certain sense of meaning and inspiration from the way we have to live our lives. We've tried to do this with a project also available on our website where people can learn how to write ethical wills or legacy letters to leave like a message for their family. And they're also working deeply on making the prayer experience, tefillot that we say, the tehillim that we say, more meaningful, to provide, you know, guidance of which prayers should be recited and what they mean. So that way, when people have to make these, say these prayers, which happens quite often, they can do so in a meaningful way. And I can tell you, Nachum, there's been a lot of people who really resonate with this. I mean, just this past Sunday, I was in Teaneck speaking about the concept of reciting vidoy and final blessings that you can give to your family members. It's something that we should promote. Anytime you have some form of risky operation or some form of, crossroads in your healthcare journey, that you should give your family a bracha, that you should say something to God and make that a meaningful experience in that respect. And so we're really focusing as well on trying to find some inspiration from the phenomenon of mortality. And there's no time like the 9 days when this issue is going to come up anyway in our tefillot, in our rituals and our experiences to think about these issues.
You know, what's funny is that the first part I think is easier than the second part, meaning that, when you lay out for everybody, make sure to fill out this document, make sure you have, what is necessary in terms of power of attorney. It said those are legal issues. Those are, it expands because there's a halacha in our community. So it expands from the straight legal methods that, have been implemented in this country or around the world in general. So obviously there's a halacha component to it, but there's it sounds like a checklist that one can go ahead and, with the help of your website and consultation with people that you recommend, they can get that done. The second part, as you said, legacy letters, what to say to family, with the thought in mind that this will be, communicated to them after one's passing, prayer and convincing or recommending or suggesting to family members that prayer and blessings actually, are helpful in situations like this. That to me seems like the more difficult part to have people implement. Am I right or wrong?
I think you're right, because the first element, well, it's difficult, but it's sort of like an achievable task.
Right.
So you can sort of think of it as like a bucket list.
Right.
The second one is much more about an approach to life and sort of respecting and recognizing what it is that we want to leave in this world and the legacy we want to have. People sometimes say to me like, oh, you're the rabbi of death. And I'm like, absolutely not. I'm the rabbi of living. I want to live, meaningfully to 120. And we want to try to give people those tools. Your pulpit rabbi is going to be the one who's going to answer hilchot, avelot and stuff like that. They can take care of the questions of mourning. We Jews do mourning very well. We don't do mortality as well. And that's what we're trying to really help people with.
Did I ever tell you, you reminded me when you called yourself or referenced the fact that some might call you the rabbi of death. Did I ever share with you, I don't know if I did or didn't, my father's word about the complaint that the Malach HaMavos had to the one above? Did you and I ever discuss that?
I don't think so.
I want to share it with you if you don't mind, because I think you'll use it the next time someone accuses you of being the rabbi of death. The Malach HaMavos, the angel of death, had a complaint to the one above, to the Ribono Shel Olam. You give so many angels such beautiful names, Michal, Gavriel, Raphael, etc., etc. You give them such beautiful names, and me, you name the Malach HaMavos. And the one above turns to the angel of death and says, "Fear not. Nobody will ever blame you for the person's death. They'll always sit there going, if only I would have called this doctor, or if only I would have made this turn, or if only I would have done this, or if somebody else would have stepped in, they'll blame everybody else for the person's passing, but they'll never blame you and understand that all of this was decreed from God." So next time they call you the rabbi of death, Rabbi, I hope you remember my father's words regarding this topic.
That's very good. It's very good. And jokes aside, I mean, it is very humorous, but jokes aside, it is an important lesson there that, we can try to do what we can, of course, to be healthy and stay healthy and make decisions. Not everything in life is in our hands. And that's part of the nature of the human condition and what we have to recognize. And, I think Torah, Judaism gives us wisdom about how to think about those issues and make it meaningful. So that way we live, Avneh v'Esrem, but with that sense of meaning and purpose.
Well said. Ematai, by the way, and the website, folks, is EMA, right? Some people may want to toss an I in there. It's EMA, T EMATAI.org, EMATAI.org. On the website, you'll find educational resources with informative and thought-provoking essays, articles, videos, webinars, and lectures. There'll be real-time counseling. That's a hotline for patients, rabbis, and healthcare professionals in sensitive situations. Advanced planning tools, including the set of resources that Rabbi Brody outlined, the Living Will, a conversation primer, stuff to really get this process going and to encourage people to take care of the things that need to be taken care of. Tell me about the real-time counseling. I mean, you have experts standing by to literally get into conversation with people about these topics?
24/7. Wow. People call, and sometimes, you know, sometimes we try to upstream the conversations. That's why we call it AMTI, right? If not now, when, right? Right. So we'll be a little more prepared. But sometimes, you know, you have a situation where you're in a hospital, you need to know, like, what do I do here? Do I have to make this, you know, surgery or not do the surgery? Do we provide artificial nutrition, hydration? Do we intubate the patient? And, you know, sometimes these are questions which really just you have to answer very fast and with consultation with doctors and whatnot. And we try to give halacha guidance, you know, on the spot. And it's 24/7, meaning we answer the shilas and Shabbos as well. Right. Because as one of our poskim said to me, the Malach HaMavis, you know, works 24/7. Yeah. 1/7 of all shilas happen on Shabbos. I said to him, how do you know that? He says, because that's the way life works.
Yeah, so, I would argue it's a bigger percentage on Shabbos because that's the way it feels. that every time you turn around and it's Friday night, all of a sudden, God forbid, those are when the emergencies start. But you're right. It's at least 1/7, right?
That's right. And there's no doubt, and people need a place to turn. And you know, so we're trying to be available for people because it's a horrible feeling when you have to make these decisions all on your own. And we have the gift of Torah, that gives us this, you know, just wealth of wisdom that can help us think about these issues and give us the confidence that we're making a proper decision. You know, we don't always know what's the right decision. There's a lot of medical uncertainty. You can't always know for sure. Doctors are amazing, but they too, you know, they're sages, not prophets, so to speak. Yeah. So we have to make decisions in the face of uncertainty, and Torah can help us guide us in some of those very critical decisions.
And I'm not going to go through all the names, but you do have online, so anybody can go look it up. You have online a very distinguished group of doctors. I mean, people that many of us are very familiar with in terms of their expertise in this and other medical areas. And then you have a very distinguished rabbinic advisory board. Again, names that have always been associated with both the rabbinate and with the field of medicine. Some of the rabbis, in fact, are actually doctors that you have aboard. So, you know, people.
Yeah.
So people can.
Absolutely. Yeah. Part of the. That's right. People should feel that they're sure that this is an organization that's, you know, in conversation, deep conversation between halacha, poskim, halachic wisdom, and contemporary medicine and the best of medicine.
100%. All right. It's all there. AMATAI.org is the website, and everything that we've discussed in this conversation is up there on the site. Go to EMATAI.org, TAI.org, EMATAI.org. And get all the information. If you're a rabbi, a healthcare provider, a patient, a family member, everything's up there for you, including the organ donation resources. Obviously, that's when that goes back to when AMATAI was founded, and all the different things that we discussed in terms of healthcare choices and what you need to know to plan properly is up there on the website. Or by Dr. Shlomo Brody. Anything else you'd like to add, sir?
You know, I just want to say, people ask me sometimes, well, this healthcare end of life stuff, very tense. What do you do to relax? So I told people for a long time, well, I'm writing about military ethics and war and the dilemmas. So one of the postgame I was speaking to once, Rabbi Yaakov Neuberger, sort of said to me, you might need to get out a little bit more, right? Find another hobby. But I'll tell you, I find it very, very meaningful to help people. And I feel like a real zchut that I have the opportunity to help people when they, you know, these very difficult times and share the wisdom of Torah. And I hope people feel inspired that their Torah can help them in these difficult times.
Yeah, and by the way, and it's funny because we just brought this up with the Right Crone a couple of weeks ago, but even in the most dire of circumstances, and I'm talking about, you know, the calendar, obviously this is the time of year, you know, that one associates with dire circumstances and everything that the Jewish people are going through, and even the day-to-day that you are going through, whether it is delving into the issues of ethics for the army or whether it's the issues that Imatai deals with, there is still so much positive that is associated with all of this. There's still so much goodness and so much positive that comes from these experiences. And it does sound like you are at least enjoying that part of these pursuits as well.
Absolutely.
So Baruch Hashem. You don't have to get out that much. Baruch Hashem, you're balancing things properly. A real pleasure to speak with you, Rabbi Brody. A continued success with Imatai. I hope that our listeners continue to stay up to date with your activities.
Thank you so much.
Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Brody, Executive Director at Imatai. Check it out, EMATAI.org.